Hello, this is Lafayette Faust, creator of the Nevermore Hollows podcast. Thank you for making the show a success. Please take a moment to subscribe, give 5 stars, comment, and share the show with your friends. It's the best way to help us grow and to be able to continue to provide quality horror content. Also, please support our new art director, Chris Madman Goins at Black Sheep Studios TN on Instagram. He has some amazing Nevermore Hollows art for sale, signed by the both of us, as well as many other original pieces I think you're gonna love. Now, for you horror hounds who like to have a good laugh, I invite you to check out my other podcast. It's called The Three Uncool Cats. In it, my two friends and I sit in a basement and discuss music, movies, and whatever else comes into our warped minds. I would really appreciate it if you would give it a listen. Now, with that out of the way, I invite you to sit back, turn on a light, and prepare yourself. My name is Tiberius Poe. I'm an investigator who specializes in cases that cannot be cracked using ordinary logic or investigative techniques. Most private detectives show up at a crime scene, see a body, and follow the clues to determine who was responsible. I show up at crime scenes where the body of the deceased has decided to get up and walk about town. My mind is flexible enough to understand the occult nature of these types of cases and can usually track down the undead and stop it before it causes too much havoc. You could say that my Native American heritage plays a role in my unique abilities, and I wouldn't fault you for such an idea. We Native Americans have always been open to the truth of the spiritual realm. I sat in my office a few nights back, making notes on a case I'd just wrapped up concerning a wraith that had taken up residence in the abandoned movie theater next door to my office. I worked that one for free because the damn thing was just too close to home. I was hoping to finish up before it got too late and grab pizza from Dante Inferno's pizzeria and read the new Kuntz book with some Julian Lage playing in the background. That cat sure knows how to play the guitar, making me wonder why I even bother with my Telecaster. Anyway, just as I was about to call it a night, Marlene Bloom walked into my office. She had shown up a few months back and told me that she was here to be my secretary. She's smart, cute, wears nerd glasses, and is always reading a horror novel of some kind. At the time, I could not afford to pay her, and she said that she didn't need payment. She came in every day without fail and sat in the outer office, reading her books, occasionally being of some assistance. After a while, I worked a case that made me wealthy, and I decided to make her a partner. Alyssa just called and asked if we could come over to Eli Beck's farm. She says there's some weird mojo happening over there that could use your expertise. Mosley's already been there and has released the scene to her. Alyssa Hart was the town's coroner and a close friend of mine. She and I have consulted on a number of cases over the years, and over the past few months, she and Marlene have decided that they are now besties. I looked at the time. It was 5 o'clock and would be dark soon. Considering how I usually end up running through the woods chasing some paranormal beast, I would prefer working cases during the day, but that rarely happens. Most monsters prefer the dark. "Don't look so put out, Tiberius," Marlene said. When she first showed up, it was off-putting how casually she used my first name, considering we did not know each other. However, I have come to like the way she says my name. It has a dash of southern twang and a pound of witty attitude that blends together and rolls off her lips like sweet tea. It's just that I was looking forward to a quiet night, I said. Well, as good as Kuntz is at writing about the paranormal, we get to live it, Marlene said. Come on, Alyssa's already there and says it's gruesome and strange. Doesn't that sound enticing? I stood and grabbed my jacket and sidearm. It's a Glock 40. I followed her out of the office, marveling at how she could keep her cheery attitude with the cases we've worked together. If we hurry, maybe we can make it back before it gets too dark, I said. Maybe this will be an easy one. Marlene gave me a sly look. Come on, Tiberius. Are they ever easy? I shrugged. We can always hope. Isn't that what you've taught me? We stepped out onto the sidewalk. The sky was clear, the sun westering and casting long shadows onto Phantom Lane. My black 72 Blazer was parked in front of Lost Souls Tattoo Parlor, which my office sits above. We got in and headed out of town. It took about 30 minutes to make it to Beck's farm. Old man Beck owns about 60 acres that butts up against the Pink Flamingo's trailer park where a lot of crazy happens. So I was surprised that this was the first time that I've ever been called out to look into anything strange. We turned off County Road 33 and drove a tractor path deep into one of Beck's fields. We drove over a hill and saw a large red barn with about 40 cows meandering around. We saw Alyssa's powder blue 66 VW bus. She used that instead of the black wagon that most coroners use. She's quirky that way. It was parked next to Beck's John Deere and Rocco Rose truck. Rocco is the town veterinarian. We parked and got out of the Blazer. We saw old man Beck, Alyssa, and Rocco were 30 yards away, standing over what looked to be two bodies, one a man, the other a cow. Marlene and I walked up, and I noticed that the dead man was Ernesto Cruz, one of Beck's trusted farmhands. Ernesto lay on the ground with what appeared to be large bite marks on his legs. A big chunk of his torso was a gory mess. Also, his head had been crushed, as if it had been put in a vise. It was gruesome. Damn it, I said. Ernesto was a good man, polite, hardworking, a great storyteller after having a couple of beers. Eli Beck was a weathered 60 with deep wrinkles and leathery skin. He ran a work-gnarled hand through his wispy white hair. I love that man like a brother. Been working for me about 20 years. This cuts deep. I looked at Alyssa. She was 50, red hair, and took her job seriously without letting it darken her soul. She always had a sly smile and a curiosity that lit up her face. But today she wore a grim mask. She also knew how good a man Ernesto had been. She knew the question I was about to ask. The cow, she said. I looked at the cow. It lay on its side, a large bullet hole in the center of its face, its snout covered in gore. So, the cow killed Ernesto? I asked. Yep, Beck said. We were getting ready to do some plowing. And at first, I didn't hear him, 'cause I was on the tractor. But when I did, it was terrible. I looked over and it had him. It was biting into his side there. It had already chewed up his legs. I jumped off and ran over to try to stop it all from happening, but the cow dropped him to the ground and then bit his head and crushed his skull. I had to shoot the damn thing. I glanced at Rocco. Rabies? Rocco was in his mid-30s, stocky, partial to wearing Western shirts. No, that's not rabies. It's very rare for cows to get rabies, and they rarely get aggressive when they do. They get anorexic and skittish. Well then, what is it? Marlene asked. Beck looked down at the ground and winced, as if he didn't really want to say what was on his mind. After a moment, he said, "Twice over the past couple weeks, I've had cows go missing. I found one of them over next to those damn woods, gutted and missing its brain. I didn't say nothing, cause, well, that close to the woods, it could be, well, you know." We all knew that Dunwich Forest wasn't filled with Disney animals, and that what lurked there was often born of evil and black magic. So, yeah, we knew. "You think the missing cows and the one you found gutted are related to this incident?" I asked. He shrugged. "Hard to say, but possible. I mean, around here anything's possible." "It's too much of a coincidence," Marlene said, "and I don't think any of us here believe in coincidences." "So, let's say they are related," Alyssa said. "What do we think is going on?" "I know this is a loaded question," I said, directing it toward Beck, "but have you seen anything else strange happening around here lately?" Beck looked down at Ernesto, and grief tried to distort his face, but he beat it back. He was a private man and would allow himself to grieve after we were gone. "A few nights before my cows come up missing, I saw some lights in the sky. I didn't think nothing about them, cause they was far out on the south side of my property out near Lugosi Swamp. I just figured it was swamp gas and paid it no mind. But now that I think about it, what if it was something else?" I could see on his and Alyssa's face that they were thinking the same thing, but no one wanted to say it, except for Marlene. She seems to delight in saying the things others are too timid to utter. "Could be aliens," she said. I could see that while she was respectful of the dead, there was a gleam in her eye at the possibility. Rocco was a fine veterinarian, but he had only lived in Nevermore Hollows for a couple years. I'd met him a few times, and he seemed to be one of those who could go either way when it came to embracing the truth of the paranormal. As far as I knew, this was the first time he'd been up close and personal with the reality of it. "Are you serious?" he said. "I'm a man of science. There's a logical explanation to all this." And there was my answer. But I agreed with him to an extent. This wasn't aliens, but it was paranormal. Before I could reply, Alyssa said, "I'm also a woman of science, Rocco, and if I truly believe in the power of the scientific method, then I am bound to accept all theories and try to disprove them before dismissing them out of hand." Rocco was skeptical. "Alyssa, I respect your opinions, and I know what you're thinking. All the classic signs are here. Strange lights in the sky, mutilated cows. But I simply can't accept that this is the work of aliens." I knew they called me out for my expertise, so in an attempt to defuse the situation, I gave them my thoughts on it. "It's not aliens." Alyssa cast a curious glance at me. She trusted me. "So what is it?" "Not sure," I said, though I was developing a theory. "But the only way to find out is to use all our abilities on this. Rocco, can you autopsy the cow and tell me what you find?" "I was only going to run blood and saliva samples," he said. "But I don't mind performing an autopsy. What do you want me to look for?" "I trust you," I said. "If there's anything that doesn't make sense, please let me and Alyssa know." "I'll take Ernesto," Alyssa said. I'll do a full autopsy on him as well. And until we know what's going on, I think we should take extra precaution to not touch the bodies. I brought gloves and masks. If we're careful, we should be okay until we get them back to our labs. Well, we know what killed Ernesto, Rocco said. Why do an autopsy? Alyssa was not one to lose her patience, but Rocco was pushing her. I'm the coroner, and if I feel it's best for all involved to perform an autopsy, I will. And I'd think that cows attacking people is such odd behavior that you'd want to find out if that poor animal was suffering from some disease that could possibly jump species and cause a town-wide health concern. Rocco put up his hands. I don't mean any disrespect, Alyssa. You're right. I'm not looking at the bigger picture. To offer an olive branch, Rocco offered to help Alyssa put Ernesto in a body bag and load him in the back of her VW bus. Alyssa promised to coordinate her findings with him and drove out of the field. Rocco walked back over and looked at the cow. I'll need some help getting her in the back of my truck. I got a front end loader attachment for my tractor, Beck said. We can use that. You got help to unload her once you get her to your office? Rocco said that he did. I helped them get the cow loaded and let Rocco drive away before I laid out my plan to get to the bottom of this case. Eli, I want to set up surveillance over the next couple of nights. How many farmhands do you currently have who live on site?
I got four, Eli replied. Jason, Eddie, Denver, and Lindell. They all live in the ranch house across the road.
They won't be working on the farm at all after dark, I asked.
Nah, Eli said. We get everything done by dark, and they usually head over to the house or into town by then.
The sun had finally slipped behind the towering trees of Dunwich Forest, and darkness draped the landscape like a funeral shroud. What time have you noticed the lights in the sky? And how many? Eli squinted as he thought, causing the wrinkles on his face to deepen.
I don't sleep so well since Martha passed last year, and I sometimes sit out on the porch after midnight. I reckon about that time at night. There are always two lights. They look like glowing green balls about 4 feet in diameter.
I checked the time. It was pushing 7 o'clock. Okay, I said. I'm going to run back to my office and grab some supplies and drop Marlene off.
Let's take a quick break.
Out of the woods can the moon...
Moon Carter is a family fictional podcast, and I mean for the family. Parents, do you find it really hard to make it through your children's podcasts?
Then listen to Moon Carter and join me, Splot, and the gang on our magical adventures. Click all the links below or get it from where you get your podcast from. But if you need to be told that, then I worry about you. Splash. It's like drink water from where water's from.
Not,
what's that about?
Not helping. Moon Carter is a podcast. You like it,
What do you mean? Marlene said. Zombie cows, strange lights in the sky? I'm working this one with you. I knew that I wouldn't be able to talk her out of it, and to be honest, I'm glad she wanted to come along. Hollywood makes stakeouts look so cool and fun, but let me tell you, the hard truth is, most of the time, they're boring as hell. You can't bring along a book to read or watch anything on your phone because you have to stay focused. The best way to deal with the boredom is to have someone along who can carry on a good conversation. We'll grab something to eat, get some supplies, and be back by 9, I said. Then I put a comforting hand on Beck's shoulder. We'll figure this out, and we'll get some answers.
I know you will, Beck replied. And if you need anything, just call me. You got my number.
Once Marlene and I were back on the road, headed back to the office, she said, So... we know that swamp gas is a thing, but it isn't this thing. And it sure as hell doesn't make cows crave human flesh, so spill it. What do you think it is?
I believe the cow that killed Ernesto has prion disease. That's mad cow, Marlene said. Never heard of cows becoming aggressive because of that. I think it's a variant, I replied. You mean, like, somebody has taken prion disease and tampered with it? Yes, but I hope I'm wrong. One of the reasons I liked her was that she pulled no punches. If she thought I was off base, she'd tell me, force me to get my theories right. Marlene considered this for a moment and said, shit. That was not the answer I'd hoped to hear. You don't think I'm wrong? She shook her head. Unfortunately, no. And that's what scares me. Under the right conditions, prion disease can jump species. If you're right, and the cow had some new variant that made it aggressive and want to chew on people, what would happen if it crossed over to humans? I don't want to put that into words, I said. We drove in silence for a moment with scenes from George Romero movies gnawing through my brain. Finally, Marlene broke the silence. Elissa thinks the same thing, doesn't she? That's why she took all that extra precaution. I imagine so, I replied. And you really do think someone has tampered with it? It's possible, I said. I had another theory I was working on, but I wasn't quite ready to say it, not even to Marlene. So we rode the rest of the way to my office in silence. We parked, ran up the stairs and into my office where I grabbed a couple pairs of night vision binoculars to go along with the regular ones I keep in my blazer. Marlene decided she needed something more powerful than her SIG and grabbed the 12-gauge shotgun she kept behind her desk. We left the office and drove to Dante Inferno's and shared a veggie pizza. Then stopped by Henriksen's Hardware, where I had the owner cut a couple boards into 5-foot lengths. I also bought a bag of iron nails. We got back to Beck's farm a few minutes after 9. I parked atop a small hill that overlooked the fields that butted up against the forest. I angled the blazer so that we could also get a glimpse toward Lugosi Swamp. We couldn't actually see the swamp because it was 100 yards or so into the forest, but we'd be able to see if the lights came from there. I shut off the engine and handed Marlene a pair of the night vision binoculars. She put them on the dash and shoved some shells into her shotgun. She placed the shotgun in the back seat and then turned to me. Isn't this exciting? It had not been quite a year since she walked into my office and told me she was going to be my secretary. It had only been a few months since I'd made her a partner. However, she was not forthcoming on a lot of detail from her past. She would occasionally say something that would fill in her backstory, and it always surprised me. All I know at this point is that she can handle herself. And that is good enough for me. I'll admit that this one does intrigue me a bit more than usual, I replied. She motioned to the supplies I'd bought from Hendrickson's. What's with the wooden nails? I want to see what this swamp gas looks like before I tell you, I said. We might not need them. Oh, that is so cryptic, she said. I like it when you're mysterious. Isn't that the pot calling the kettle black, I said. What's that supposed to mean? I shrugged. It means that you know a whole lot more about my past than I do about yours. We're now partners, but you still keep your past secret. She looked at me as if I had offended her. Tiberius, I've told you. I'm an open book. She has said this to me many times, but whenever I prepare to ask her a probing question, something happens that gets in the way. Okay, then. You say you were sent to protect me. Who sent you? There is a lot about Marlene that reminds me of a cat. She gave me her curious cat look and started to say something when the cows in the dark field below us began to make loud noises of distress. We snatched our night vision binoculars and looked down onto the field. There were about 40 cows. Earlier, they had been spread out, munching on grass. Now they were walking in a large circle, sounding agitated. "Ever see cows do that?" Marlene asked. "No," I replied. "They're speeding up," she said. Sure enough, the cows went from a slow lumbering to a lope. As we watched, they began to moo more loudly. The circle became tighter. They were in danger of bumping into each other. Suddenly, two orbs shot up from the woods, about where Lugosi Swamp was located. They were roughly 3 feet in diameter and had a greenish glow. They swirled above the woods for 30 seconds or so, then floated out over the field. As they did, the cows began to moo even more loudly, clearly scared. They tightened their circle and began bumping into each other. The orbs swirled around the herd for a moment, then positioned themselves about 50 feet above the center of the circle. Suddenly, a green shaft of light shot from each of them and settled onto a single cow. The poor creature cried out and tried to break from the circle. Instead, it began to be lifted up toward the orbs. It thrashed its legs and head and screamed. I snatched my phone and began recording. The beams pulled the cow up to within a few feet of the orbs. The cow thrashed and squirmed and moaned. The orbs began to pulse. At first out of sync and then finally in unison. The pulses got faster. The cow moaned. The greenish glow turned to violet. The cow began to cry out in pain. The violet glow turned crimson and began to pulse faster and faster, and the crimson turned such a deep red that it resembled blood. The cow was now in agony. It screamed and mewed and thrashed and kicked. The bloody pulse was faster, faster, and faster still until the orbs exploded in a violent yet completely silent flash. The visceral light was so bright that it hurt my eyes. I flinched, threw up my hands to shield my face, and then, when I opened my eyes, I was disoriented. I wasn't completely sure where I was. In confusion, I looked over at Marlene, and I saw confusion on her face as well. Where are we? She asked. I was unable to focus. My mind was foggy. It took a moment, and then I remembered. The cow! Marlene's eyes shot wide. Yes! She grabbed her binoculars and looked down onto the field. The orbs were gone. The cows had all collapsed. They lay in a circle. One cow in particular was in the center. I wonder if that's the one that the orbs had hold of, I said. The orbs? Where did they go? Marlene said. I remembered that I'd been recording. I snatched my phone, and a chill shot through me. We're missing time. What? Marlene said. You mean like during alien abductions? For those of you who haven't gone down the alien abduction rabbit hole, many people who have come in contact with UFOs claim to have passed out for 9 minutes. It's simply referred to as missing time. No one knows why it happens or why it always seems to be 9 minutes. I looked at my phone and did the calculations. Yes, we've been out for 9 minutes. I quickly scanned the recording, but it stopped after the bright flash. We did not know what happened during those 9 minutes. We saw a light coming from near the barn. We sat about 60 yards from the circle of cows. We used the binoculars to see that it was one of the farmhands. He was riding a horse and scanning the area with a flashlight. He must be responding to the noise the cows were making, I said. And probably the lights, Marlene added. No way anyone who was halfway paying attention would have missed them. Look, the cows are waking up. We have to stop him, I said. We don't know what those orbs did to them. I fired up the blazer, turned on the lights, and blew the horn. The farmhand gave a wave but kept heading toward the cows. He wasn't suspicious of us because Becca told him we'd be here. The cows had all gotten onto their feet and spread out. The cow in the center, the one we thought might be the one the orbs had gotten hold of, stumbled toward the farmhand. Shit, I said. He doesn't understand the danger. I put the blazer in gear and tore off down the hill, but I could see that we weren't going to make it in time. The farmhand got to within a few feet of the cow, and his horse became scared, reared up, and tossed him off. He hit the ground hard. The cow shot toward him, surprisingly quick, though it still had a strange stumbling gait. My headlights washed over them, and I could see the farmhand was Denver, a 20-year-old boy who had been an orphan that Beck had taken in. He was a good kid, though not as experienced as he should be. I blew my horn again. Denver shot me a curious glance as he pushed himself up, then realized that the cow was headed straight for him and that its eyes were wild. He turned to run, but his boots slipped in the dewy grass and he fell to his knees. The cow barreled toward him. It reared its head and made a sound that was less peaceful cow and more possessed creature. Denver pushed himself up, but it was too late. The cow rammed into him, knocking him back to the ground. Denver held up his right arm in a feeble attempt to ward off the attack. The cow crunched down on his arm. Denver screamed. The cow thrashed its head back and forth, and Denver's arm was severed at the elbow, and blood sprayed. I hit the brakes and slid to a stop about 10 yards away from the cow. Marlene jumped out, aimed her shotgun at its flank so not to accidentally hit Denver. She fired 2 rapid shots, but the cow was relentless. It tossed the severed arm to the side. Denver tried to squirm away, but he was confused, in shock, losing too much blood. The cow sunk its teeth into his stomach and began chewing. It growled and moaned as blood smeared its snout. Denver stopped screaming. He was gone. I fired 3 shots into the cow's brain, finally killing the damn thing. Marlene shined her light around us, making sure the other cows had not developed a taste for human flesh. They all appeared to be okay. We were out of imminent danger. Marlene was cool, calm, in complete control of herself, though I could see the sympathy in her eyes for Denver. "I'll call Alyssa and Rocco," she said. I used my phone to call Beck and Sheriff Mosley. Beck was the first to arrive. The old man's eyes were full of grief. A few moments later, Rocco arrived, followed by Alyssa. They all parked in such a way to shine as much light on the scene as possible. Mosley showed up 5 minutes after them. He stepped out of his car and strode over to us. Mosley had been sheriff of Nevermore Hollows for a decade. He knows the dark truth, and nothing seems to faze him. He looked at Denver, then to the cow, then said, "Hit me." Marlene and I brought Mosley up to speed and showed them all the recording I'd made. Mosley explained Nevermore's dark secret in greater detail to Rocco and convinced him to keep it quiet. We then loaded the cow in the back of Rocco's truck, Denver in Alyssa's bus, and we agreed to meet at Winona's and discuss our findings over lunch the next day. We made sure Beck made it back to his home, and we left the farm. The next day, it was apparent that none of us had slept very well. We sat in a corner booth, away from earshot, eating and drinking strong coffee. I turned to Rocco. Any evidence of rabies? He shoved a forkful of syrup-swamped waffle into his mouth and shook his head. No, but I did find something that blows my mind. Let me guess, I said. Mad cow disease, but unlike any other you've ever encountered. Rocco put his fork down and swallowed hard. Yes, I did. The cow's brains are clearly infected with prions. However, instead of making them sick and sluggish and killing them, it seems to have made them aggressive. How did you know? I had a hunch, I replied. I wasn't yet ready to disclose my theory. I turned to Alyssa. Find anything interesting in the bite wounds from Ernesto and Denver? Yes, she said. But before I say anything, I'm curious. Rocco, did you find any rigor mortis in either of the two cows? Rocco was clearly struggling with his answer. No. And it typically sets in 2 hours after death. Those bodies are as fresh as when they were alive. How about Ernesto and Denver? Alyssa slowly shook her head. No rigor. That's what I found that shocked me the most. Marlene was always respectful of the dead, but she couldn't help herself in delighting in the macabre enigma. She leaned in, eyes bright, and said, "This case just keeps getting better." After a moment, Rocco said, "Are you thinking those orbs caused this?" "Yes, I do," I said, "and it appears that the lack of rigor mortis is somehow related." "That's what I'm thinking," Alyssa said. Marlene looked at me with her curious smirk. "Now that we're all on the same page, Tiberius, out with it. What's your theory?" "Yeah," Alyssa said. "Time to let us know what's happening." "I'm 99% sure I'm going to be right on this," I said. "But even after all we've seen, it's going to be hard to digest. So instead of telling you, let's convene at the farm tonight and let me show you." We finished our meal, made plans to meet on the hill overlooking the same field at Beck's farm. Then we all went our separate ways to get some rest. Later that evening, at 7:30, I swung by Marlene's place and picked her up. She lives in a 100-year-old craftsman home. It's cozy and charming, and in the spring is full of flowers and bees and birds and trees. And her neighbor's cat, a black and white named Junji, who she believes is as sentient as any human, can occasionally be seen napping on the porch swing. We made it to Beck's at the same time as Rocco. He followed us in his truck as we made our way back to the hill that overlooked the field and the swamp. Alyssa was already there, parked in her VW bus. I parked on her right, Rocco on her left. Since there was more room in her bus, we all agreed to pile in. Alyssa and Marlene would sit in the front, and Rocco and I would sit on the bench seat behind them. The bus has plenty of windows, so we would all have a front row seat to whatever may happen. "There's something I need to do before I get in with you," I told them. "What are you going to do?" Alyssa asked. "I'm going to set a trap," I replied. I drove the Blazer down into the field where the cows were mingling about. I hoped they'd stay in this area when it got dark. If the orbs showed up again, they'd come directly to the cows. I hopped out and grabbed the boards and the nails. The cows paid no mind as I laid the boards on the ground. I arranged them to make two crucifixes, about 5 feet apart. I took a hammer from a toolbox I keep in the blazer and hammered a nail at the foot of each and at the end of each crossbar. I left them lying flat on the ground. I drove back up the hill and got into the bus to curious looks from the others. They'd been watching me with their binoculars. "You're gonna have to explain that to us," Alyssa said. Marlene gave me a smile that suggested she understood what I had done. Rocco had a look of utter confusion. "I think it will be better if you just let it play out," I said. Marlene's eyes glimmered and she flashed a Cheshire smile. "Isn't this delicious?" We passed the time making small talk until a few moments before 9. Then we quieted in anticipation. It was full on dark, and the crescent moon hung in the sky like a cosmic smirk. The orbs had shown up every other night around this time, and we were hopefully expectant for them to return yet again. At about 9:30, the cows began to work themselves back into a circle, making sounds of increasing distress. We then saw a glow appear in the woods, again, about where Lugosi Swamp was located. After a moment, the orbs rose above the tree line, pulsating in the eerie green glow, swirled about for a moment, then floated out toward the cows. "You going to tell us what the crosses are for?" Alyssa said, keeping her eyes on the action below. "Just wait," I said. "If I'm right, we're about to see something interesting." The cows tightened their circle, walking faster, making noises of terror. The orbs floated closer. At one point, I thought they weren't going to float over the crosses. If I was correct in what was happening here, it was crucial that they pass over the crosses. The cows cried and mooed and moaned. The orbs began to glow brighter and pulsate faster as they moved closer. They passed over the crosses and stopped, as if being held against their will, as if in some invisible tractor beam. They jerked back and forth, right to left, and up and down, but they could not break free. They began to pulsate faster and brighter, the green glow flashing so fast it hurt our eyes. A low hum began, almost inaudible at first, then got louder. After a moment, we realized it wasn't a hum, but an annoyed growling, and it was coming from the two orbs. It rose into a mad crescendo, then morphed into an unearthly scream of rage. There was a flash of the most intense lightning I had ever experienced, followed by an earth-shaking peal of thunder. And then it was over. It took a few rapid heartbeats for our eyes to adjust because of the bright spots the lightning had left on our vision. Down in the field, the cows were running in all directions, away from the crosses. I used the binoculars and could see that my hunch had been correct. The crosses had worked as I'd hoped they would. Each cross lay flat on the ground. However, they each seemed to have some creature laying on them. "Oh my God," Rocco said, looking at the scene with his own binoculars. His voice was shaky. His hands were trembling. Alyssa turned to me. She had a look of both scientific curiosity and childish wonder. "Just when I thought I'd seen it all," she said, letting the rest of her thoughts trail off. "Let's get down there and take a closer look," Marlene urged. I nodded at Alyssa. She put the bus in gear and carefully drove down the dark hill, the beams from her headlights cutting a sharp swath into the darkness below. "Don't get too close," I said. "They're probably not dead." "Well, don't worry about that," Alyssa said. "I've learned to proceed with caution." She parked 40 yards away from the crosses and we all hopped out into the night. We didn't need flashlights because she'd angled the bus so that her light shone over the crosses. I can't do this," Rocco said. "I'm sorry, I just can't." I shot him a look. "I understand. It's a lot to process." I walked slowly toward the crosses. Alyssa and Marlene were a foot or so behind me. I pulled my pistol, knowing that Marlene had her shotgun. Alyssa had pulled her sidearm as well. As we approached, the things laying on the crosses began to make low, ominous noises. We stopped 5 yards away, and Alyssa said, "What the hell are we looking at?" To each cross, in the classic crucifixion pose, was nailed a small, naked creature, each about 4 feet tall, with black and green mottled skin. Their eyes were large, and they each had a long tail that ended with a sharp spike. Their mouths were wide slits with jagged teeth. Each of their hands had 4 long fingers. Their feet were eerily simian with splayed-out toes. They writhed and hissed and tried to pry their hands and feet from the crosses, but to no avail. "Those don't look like aliens," Marlene said. "They're not aliens," I replied. "They're demons." When I said this, the demon attached to the cross to our right brought its smoldering red eyes to bear on me. It spoke with a voice filled with hate.
"Set us free, Tiberius Poe."
"I can't do that," I replied. The demon affixed to the cross on our left had eyes that burned magma orange. It spat at us. Its saliva glowed that eerie greenish glow. And when it landed at our feet, the grass began to turn black and wither.
"You know what we are. Let us go or you will suffer the wrath of our dark father."
Red Eye chimed in.
"The original rebel, the prince of this world, the dragon who feeds on the souls of the innocent."
Now that they had confirmed my theory of what they were, I had questions. "What have you been up to? Why have you done this to these cows?" They each gave a hellish chuckle. Red Eye said,
"We come to ruin."
"Yes,"
the other hissed.
"We bring a plague."
Red Eye gave a gleeful laugh.
"Our plague will make you turn on each other like hungry animals."
The demon with orange eyes flicked out a black forked tongue as if savoring what he was to say next.
"Mindless cannibals."
"But why start with the cows?" Marlene asked. "Why not go directly to humans?" Alyssa knew that answer. "The bite itself won't necessarily transmit the prion. The best way to infect us is through our food supply." That gave me a chill. These demons had failed. We'd stopped this plague before they could perfect it and set it free, but we needed to let higher authorities know to be on the lookout for anything similar. I left it with Alyssa to figure out how to notify the proper national authorities. I knew she'd come up with a rational story that they would buy into. Did you come from Lugosi's swamp? I asked. Red Eye snarled. Orange Eye growled. They weren't giving me anything further. Whether or not they came from the swamp or from somewhere else in the woods really didn't matter. Either way, it was time to put a stop to these two demons running amok. My pistol is loaded with silver bullets. Cliche, sure. But it's cliche for a reason. It works. I shot both in the heart. Immediately upon their deaths, they began to sizzle and crackle, and within a few heartbeats there was nothing left but a black smear on each of the crosses. Alyssa and Marlene helped me remove the nails and put the wood in Alyssa's bus. She wanted to run tests on the residue that was left behind. While we did this, Rocco paced a few feet away in deep reflection. I'd seen that internal struggle in others when the dark truth is thrust upon them. I'm hoping he will accept it and become an ally. Either he will, or his attempt to remain in denial will drive him mad. We drove back up the hill. Rocco got into his truck and left without saying a word. Marlene and I got into the Blazer and followed Alyssa to Winona's Waffle Hut. We sat at a booth, Alyssa and I on one side and Marlene on the other. We ordered drinks and food and sat for a moment in silence. Marlene sat sideways in the booth, one knee up, back against the wall. After a while, she said, "You realize what we did tonight, don't you?" Alyssa and I both knew what she was going to say next, though we didn't want her to. "Don't say it, Marlene," I said, though we both knew that Marlene would not be stopped. Marlene's cat green eyes glimmered. Her grin became a playful smirk. "We stopped the zombie apocalypse from happening." Alyssa and I both groaned. It simply sounded too Hollywood. Too cliche. But it was true. What these two demons attempted to do was infect our food supply with a disease that would turn us humans into mindless creatures who crave flesh. One of the waitresses, Antoinette Boudreau, brought us our food, and we chose to do the only thing that could possibly keep us sane after battling demons and mad cows. We swapped funny stories and ate our waffles. And in that moment, life was abundantly good.